Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift in antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we are here to prove it. We are here to help you identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. Again, I am Brandon with my friend Matt Brock.
Hello.
The master reseller. How you doing, Matt? How's it going today?
I'm good. I still got a little, that thing that everyone's got in their throat right now.
Yeah.
Good time. Recovering from the cold. Yeah, just getting through this, the end of this winter.
It is. I was sick a couple weeks ago and it just lingers. So it is good that you're back. I know you've been a little bit down for the count on the mat, if you will. So we're glad to have you back. And at least 80% of Matt is better than 100% of most people. So let's just go with that.
Man, I need to keep that quote. Could that go on my tombstone?
Absolutely. Put that on your website.
80% of this man is better than 100% of others.
That's right. Absolutely right. Absolutely. Oh, you bring more to the table than most. That's for sure. So anyway, let's get going. We have a brand new episode for us this week. So as I like to say, Matt keeps me in the dark as well. So what are we going to be talking about today, Mateo?
We're going to be talking about things that make music.
Oh,
instruments.
Like bongo drums? Instruments. Good.
Yeah. This is sort of talking about origin story, not origin story of Rusty or the characters of the YouTube stuff, but the origin of how I got into, really, I would say, got into selling online and looking for things that have value was instruments, because I'm somewhat of a musical person. I don't get to dedicate as much time to it these days as I did when I was younger, before kids and all of that, but still important to me. And I still really enjoy having my hands on stuff and making music. And so years ago, I would say, probably 15 years ago, is when I really started looking for guitars primarily, but just about any sort of stringed instrument. Find something that has, it's undervalued, being sold for less than it's worth, buy it. Sometimes it was as simple as just that. I can get it. I can immediately turn around and flip it. I wasn't looking for big value back then. $100 is fine with me. I'm going to play it in the meantime, have fun with it, learn about an instrument, part with it. Now I'm looking for the next thing.
Have you been a musician most of your life? When did you start playing music?
When I was a kid, my mom played a little bit. My grandfather played guitar, and I was fascinated with it when I was younger. And I think my parents saw that. They got me a guitar and some books. I don't think I had a whole lot of formal education in it when I was younger. And as kids do, like you're excited about one thing, you've lost interest or you're not willing to put in the time. And I kind of was still interested in it. But, when you're playing guitar, especially for those who don't know, like it's a little bit hard on your fingers. The more you do it, you have to build up calluses and things.
Calluses.
Otherwise it doesn't feel good. And when you're like an 8 or 10 year old kid, and you don't, that internal motivation goes away really quickly when there's pain involved. So that kind of died out. But when I was in middle school, approaching high school, I got back into it. I went to some summer camps and I saw some people playing, and I think it really stuck then. And so I got a guitar, and I'm mostly self-taught. I did take a couple of classes in college, but I play guitar. I play mandolin. I can do some stuff on banjo and some other
things.
You can dabble. I dabble.
Nice. Well, it's good to have a dabbler. If you're going to sell instruments, you most likely need to have some background in music. I'm just spitballing here, but it seems like that would be a case.
I think that the thing that you would, if you're a musician, you do have a leg up on instruments, but to really identify value in an instrument, you need to have more of a critical eye and understand how things are constructed, and also be able to tell if something has encountered damage or if something is out of place, if a component has been replaced, because much like other types of items, if it's original, it's going to, we talked in the last episode about things like original boxes, original packaging. If that has that, then, you're going to get the premium. And so it can be a really old instrument, but if all of the, if it's an electric, like a Fender guitar from like the 60s, with original pickups, hand wound pickups, and the original tuning pegs, and the wiring, if that's all intact, versus the pickups have been swapped out, they had to replace the tuning pegs, you're talking the difference of thousands of dollars for the same age instrument, simply because some of those key factors are different.
Sure. So if you have a Stradivarius violin that's in mint condition, you're probably going to be able to sell it.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know if any, what the irony is that, like, when you have really valuable things, the platform that I sell on primarily, which is eBay, I find there's a threshold of value where if it goes above that, it ends up being really difficult to sell, because someone who knows what a thing is and knows what it's valued at would want it, become skeptical of that platform. And they would much like that same instrument might sell for $1 million if it's selling at Christie's or Sotheby's, right?
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. That's interesting you bring that up, because I know you primarily sell on eBay and whatever, Marketplace maybe or whatever, people. Yeah. But if you came...
I sell to people usually.
Right.
Yeah.
As opposed to private equity firms.
Mm-hmm. So
if you stumbled across something that was really... You knew it. You're a musician. You look at this, you're like, wow, this is, you know, an original Gibson or whatever, and it's in mint condition, and I know there's no way I'm going to get the value I want for it on eBay. Do you go to other places? I mean, what would one do if that happened?
There are a couple of ways. One way, and this is not the most fun way, but is to reach out on some sort of platform or word of mouth locally. I live in Western North Carolina. There are a lot of musicians, even professional musicians in my area. So I have a few contacts I could reach out to if it was very valuable. Like, I have a few pieces of, I would say, fairly valuable artwork and a few other things, some jewelry. I would reach out to an auction house that's reputable, that has longstanding and is known in the community, preferably one that has reach internationally, not just in the region. The difficulty with those is that usually to get your foot in the door in an auction house like that, it's a little difficult because they don't know you, first of all. And they don't know, like, is this yours? Did you steal this? You know, you have to build some rapport. And usually you almost have to have multiple items available to sell so that they're going to get enough money to make it worth it. But I think once you get your foot in the door and you develop a relationship and things go well, then things can be okay getting in there. But I try to sell on the platforms that I sell on usually just because it's the easiest thing to do. But I have actually personally been holding back some items that... It's not even worth my time and hassle to list them on eBay, because either A, I'm not going to get anybody to buy it, or B, I'm just going to get lowball offers and I don't want to mess with that. So I do that periodically, about once or twice a year. I send some things to auction because I'm more likely to sell them for a price at a place like that. Plus, those places are insured. They handle the packaging, the shipping, all of that. And so if some things go wrong, it's more of a reflection on them and not as much on me personally.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, when there's a cost to everything. So the value is they're going to take care of that. You would make more money if you went and were able to sell it on the open market. But that's the whole point of this, what you're doing and talking about, is there's always some business calculus going on in your head as to what the value of something is. And that, by the way, that's for every business. Even I produce podcasts for a living, and I'm constantly thinking about, do I need this technology or not? Do I want this or not? And running them numbers in my head, does it make sense? I mean, there's what we want and there's what we need. So I love that you talked about the juxtaposition of a Sotheby's versus eBay.
Yeah. And it's funny because, and this is absolutely true, this is an organic podcast in the sense that Brandon does not know what I'm going to talk about until we get on. I honestly like that too, because we can have a natural, realistic dialogue about it. And this is not planned. But you mentioned, like, what if you come across a high-end, like, Gibson instrument? Well, I actually have a high-end Gibson instrument that I'm going to show and talk about right now. So,
sweet.
Yeah, let me pull it up here.
I didn't know that. I really didn't know.
Yeah, so this sort of fits the bill for what you were talking about. It is, so what I'm showing here, for those who aren't seeing it, again, you can come to the website and see photographs of this. You can also see the YouTube version of this podcast, the What Sold Podcast YouTube channel. And you'll be able to see this because you'll be able to actually watch me as I'm showing it. But when I'm holding up, and you can see I'm wiping off dust, I've not done a good job of even keeping this clean, but it's a 1960 Gibson J45 acoustic guitar. It's like a tobacco burst is what you would call it finish. It's got a tortoise shell colored pick guard, and it's a beautiful instrument. I think this is one of the very rare examples that you will often not see or hear about of an item that I bought with the intention of probably reselling, which I still have, and it's not being sold right now.
Well, but that's part of the beauty of being a collector is that you are a true music lover, and you know I can honestly say I could collect and sell a lot of things, but there are some things I'm like, no, it's more valuable to me than it is to sell it.
So this guitar is one of those rare examples where I bought something, I thought I would sell it, and I'm not saying I won't ever sell it, but it's really enjoying being here at my house.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, right? If you've came across something that you really, really liked that touched you, that, I mean, ultimately you got, again, that's the professional math. Like, is it worth more to me than it is selling it on the open market? And sometimes the answer is a beautiful piece of art. I mean, I was thinking about earlier, I said, oh, you got to be a musician to sell musical instruments. I mean, no, you don't have to be an artist to appreciate art and to see value in art and to see, to understand the value. And it's probably the same thing about musical instruments.
Oh, it is. I mean, you know, I have a wedding ring on. I don't wear jewelry, but 80% of what I sell is jewelry related. So yeah, you don't have to, it helps to know about it, but you don't have to be using it yourself. But the story of this guitar is that I was going to an estate sale that happens every 2 weeks in my area. And the way that it operates is that they do a preview on Wednesdays of the weeks that they're doing it for 2 hours. So everything's laid out. You see the price, you see what it is, and you know where it's positioned in there. And then the sale starts the next day. You get in line, they'll hand out a number at 8 a.m. And if you want, and they only let 40 people in at a time. So the first, this is like a COVID, like a result of sort of COVID times, and they've stuck to it. So if you want to be one of the first 40 people in line, you've got to get there early. How early? You don't know. It depends on how valuable the things are that are in there that week and what other competition you might have would be. So there's that kind of weird component. But I went in. This was one of those times when I couldn't make it to the preview because of stuff in my own personal life, like picking up kids, whatever. And I didn't even want to look at the pictures because they'll send you an email with pictures too. And I didn't want to see it because I was like, I know if I see something, it's going to be something really valuable that I won't be able to get there and it'll just make me mad. So I planned on not looking at the pictures, but then that night where I went to bed, I was like, you know, I'll look at the pictures, I guess. So I get on, I look at the pictures, and all of a sudden, even though countless times I'd gone before, there'd never been high-end instruments. Oh, here's a Gibson guitar. Here's an old Gibson mandolin. Here's a banjo Lin, which I wasn't even very familiar with what that is. It's essentially, imagine the size of a mandolin and then imagine what a banjo looks like. So the body is a banjo with, you know, the kind of the skin covering over it, the top, but it's the length of a mandolin and it has the same like tuning and pairs of strings like a mandolin. They call it a banjo Lin. I don't think it's a commonly used instrument today, but there was a heyday like late 1800s, early 1900s. It was kind of in the big band era.
Kind of like the harpsichord.
Yeah, exactly. There's several instruments that sort of have, for whatever reason, fallen out of fashion. So I was so frustrated and I thought, I know these are going to sell quickly. They're clearly valuable. So I took my kids to school. I knew I wasn't going to be one of the first 40, but I ran over there anyways. And when I got in, they were all still there. I was like, how have these not been sold? Now, this is where I'm going back to a moment ago when I mentioned it's not just that you can play an instrument or understand what it is, but you have to know how to critically examine something. And that's a big part of the Rusty channel and the What Sold channel is educating people on how to examine things properly so that they can determine value and know what it is. So this guitar, and I'm going to start using some terms that maybe guitarists or musical instrument, you know, lovers won't know, but I'll explain what I'm talking about. This instrument had some pretty significant damage. Let me start with the banjo Lin and the mandolin, and I'll get to this. The banjo Lin was in actually decent condition, except that the top on it was that skin kind of portion was torn. So it needed to be replaced, but it came with the original case. The mandolin was basically in perfect condition. It was just missing the tailpiece. And the tailpiece is the portion at the very bottom bout of the instrument. And a mandolin is often like a violin in the sense that the bridge, which is where the strings go over, is what they call a floating bridge. So it's not glued down or affixed permanently onto the top of the instrument. It can be removed, and it actually needs to be placed in a certain spot so that you get the correct tuning and intonation. So the metal piece at the bottom that would the strings would hold on to between that part and the where the, it's tuned at the top was missing. So I knew I would have a little bit of work to do there. The banjo Lin was $300. The mandolin was $350. Both of them I knew were from roughly the teens or the 1920s. So they were, at this point, antique instruments. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, if I could get all of these, I might be able to sell those two instruments and basically have paid nothing. Like, I get all my money back on the cost of the guitar. So I did get those in. The mandolin was about a $1,200 to $1,500 mandolin. All I had to do was buy a tailpiece, put some strings on it. It was fine. I think I sold it for $1,100, paid $350. The banjolin, I had to buy a top. It was a weird size. Took me a while to find it. I had to put that on. I sold it for $900. So what was that? $650 was my cost on those two. And then over $2,000 was the money that came back from those instruments. But they both needed some repair. And that, I think, is why people didn't buy them initially, because they are like, ah, it's too much of a hassle, or oh, it would be nice, but it's not in good condition. Well, that doesn't usually stop me, for better or for worse. So, and in this case, it worked out. I made the money back.
And what did you say you paid for the guitar itself?
Well, I didn't say, but I'll tell you right now.
Oh, because so I was trying to run the numbers in my head to say,
yeah, sorry.
Did it pay for the guitar?
Yeah, those were just the ones that I parted with. So after that was done, this guitar, I paid $900 for it. Now, I'll start out by saying if a 1960 J45, if it was in good condition, is in the range of a $4,000 to $5,000 instrument, typically, as far as what you're seeing sales are online. The problem with this one was that it had significant damage. It had some cracks, which I don't know if you'll be able to see with the light. You can kind of see one coming down here. On the back of it, that's a crack through the wood. The headstock, which is the portion of the guitar at the top that where this the tuning pegs are, where you tune, had been dropped at some point, the guitar, and it had a significant crack. It didn't break off the headstock, but it cracked it pretty badly here. The frets themselves, which are the metal bands that go on the neck, and that's where the strings are depressed on, they had some pretty heavy indentations and needed to be replaced. The bridge, which is the portion where you put the string down into with the little peg to hold it in place, it was cracked all the way across the bridge. And this is a rosewood bridge, which is glued down onto the top of the guitar. So I was like, ooh, $900. Like, I still think it's worth it. So long story short, I had a local luthier do work on it. I spent $1,200 on the repairs. So the cost of the repairs...
A local Lutheran did work on it?
A luthier, like a woodwork, like someone who does repairs on instruments.
I put that together, you went full music nerd on us right there.
Well,
Matt.
There we go. All right. Well, you know, sometimes you gotta. You gotta
I like it. I picked up something new today.
Hey, if I don't talk the part, you know, who's gonna believe me? Right?
Absolutely. A luthier. That's a new one. I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah. So The work was done. He fabricated an entirely new bridge for me out of a block of wood to match the one that was originally there. He put a new nut in it, which is the piece of bone that the strings go over. He put a brand new, that was the saddle. And then the nut he replaced, he fixed the crack in the headstock. He completely refretted it. So he knocked all of these little metal frets out gingerly as to not damage the fretboard when the wood, he put brand new ones in. He did a complete overhaul on this thing, fixed the crack in the back. So, you know, I'm about $2,000, $2,100 into this instrument. And if I wanted to sell it today, I could easily get probably $3,500 out of it. But I have to tell you, it's the best sounding acoustic guitar that I have ever played personally. And I played hundreds of instruments.
So wait a second. Let's do the math on this. You bought... Yeah. How much did you make from the banjolin and the mandolin?
So it was $900, $350, and $300 was the cost of all three instruments.
$650 was let's forget the guitar for a second. And yep. What'd you sell those two instruments for?
It was a total of what was it? $1,100. So $2,000.
So you made $2,000 or you sold them for $2,000?
I sold them for $2,000 and I paid $650.
Okay, so you made $1,350. So mm-hmm. You basically bought...
And then I paid $1,200 to have this done. So I'm $50 ahead-ish, yeah. $1,500 ahead, and I have a 1960, and it sounds probably better than the day it was made. Like, it's all the repairs amazing. Are fixed. Yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. That's why I love, I mean, I love instruments because I like making music, as I mentioned, but vintage instruments, particularly, especially certain brands, Gibson, Fender, Martin, Guild, Gretsch, some of those, and I'm talking specifically about guitars, can bring huge values. I mean, I bought a Martin, a 0018 Martin acoustic guitar when I was in California, maybe, this is circa 2015, for $800. And that guitar today, I could get $4,000 for if I still had it. That's one of those regrets because I did sell it. I made money. I mean, I made probably a grand.
I sold a 65 Lincoln Continental with suicide doors for $400. Never does a day go by where I don't regret that. So the interesting thing about that is, did you use that guitar to play the intro?
I didn't actually.
That would have been a better story.
Okay, you know, here's the silver lining. I'm going to get a nice mic here soon that can record guitar. I will redo it with that. I think future musical interludes or segments, I'll probably use that guitar because it's great. Actually, the one I used for the intro was a resonator, commonly referred to as a Dobro, but Dobro is a specific Gibson line of resonator guitars, but it has a really good projection and loud voice for recording acoustically, and so I'd use that. But I'm going to show you two more instruments really quick, and I think, I don't know if I'm, what it is exactly that I'm recommending to people, other than to say, just because something is damaged or is not perfect condition doesn't mean it still won't have huge values. I think that if I had bought that guitar in the condition that it was for $900, I could have sold it for $1,500 without doing any work if I wanted to flip it that quickly. I have another instrument. I'll go over to a mandolin now. This is a mandolin, and I still don't exactly know what the maker is of it. It's a teardrop sort of shape. This is what would be considered an A-style mandolin. So unlike maybe higher-end bluegrass musicians that you've seen that has kind of this squiggly line on either side, like a violin, those would be called F-holes. That's just a different body style. This is an A-style. It has a round hole in the center like a guitar would have, and it's a teardrop shape. It's all a darker wood. This is probably a mahogany top, I would say. The back is scratched out. It's actually just stained. So it's like probably lower quality woods. This also had significant damage, but I only paid $12 for it at a thrift store.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was missing a couple of tuners on the tuning pegs, which are kind of in line here. So you've got two different sections. It was missing the nut. That's the section where the strings first touch something on the instrument after where they're
made of bone.
Tied in up there. Yep. Well, it can be. It can be made of, cheaper instruments are plastic. They can be made of bone, wood, various things. It was missing the tailpiece. Again, this is an example of what a tailpiece is. It's on the lower bout. It's metal. The little peg is here for putting a strap on if you want to put it over your shoulder. And then here is that floating bridge that is where the strings go over. It was missing that as well. It was missing the pick guard and the back. As you can see, this strange kind of looking colors here, where the neck affixes to the body, was cracked significantly. So it was not in playable condition when I bought it. But I like a project. I've got some woodworking tools and things, and I thought, you know what? I'd like to make this thing work. Whether I keep it or sell it, I think I could do so for not much money. So over the course of a couple of weeks, I bought a new tailpiece. I had to buy a new floating bridge. It wasn't the correct curvature of the top, so I had to actually sand it down slowly, refit it to make sure it fit correctly. Could just find a fairly cheap pick guard that would go in. You can put new screws. The screws were all rusted out. I fabricated a new nut out of rosewood because it's the same color as the rest of it, and I already had a piece of an old bridge from a guitar out of rosewood. So I just modeled it after, you know, that I measured the shape because the nut widths can be different. I bought two new tuning peg sections here. They weren't the correct sizes because the sizes that were used on this instrument were not common sizes for the time. Unfortunately, I didn't know that ahead of time. So I had to like actually drill and reroute new holes to fit it in. And then finally, I kind of put wood putty and glue in here to fix the crack. And I actually piloted some holes and screwed some screws down in here to make sure that it held it. And then I just covered that with wood putty and then sanded it. So even though you can see it here, I will stain that and you won't be able to see it soon. You certainly can't feel that there was any work done. And that's just for aesthetics. It doesn't matter to me, but if I want to sell it, I'll clean it up a little bit. Point is, I'm about, after all that work, now there's time, but the cost, I'm about $50 into this. And it's not tuned real well right now, but it does play. And for a 1930s original instrument like this, I can easily get $200 or $300 out of this. That's like on the low end. And it was just a fun project. You know, sometimes I do a lot of repair and refurbishment work on not just instruments, other things as well. Jewelry. I did an apprenticeship with a jeweler at one time. So I actually know how to fabricate jewelry and things.
What don't you know?
Well, lots of stuff.
You're like a master.
You don't know. You don't know what I don't know. Yeah, that's, and I'm not going to tell you.
I'm feeling like there's not a lot. But anyway, continue on.
All right, the last thing I'll show you is another guitar. This guitar here is also an unknown, unbranded instrument. This is also likely from the 1920s to 1930s. It is a strange wood. I actually don't even know what kind of wood it's made out of. It's not a typical tone wood like spruce or mahogany or rosewood. It might be, I don't know, it's not maple either. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But the point is, it's like a medium grade dark. It's a kind of like a 00 body style, if you would know what that means. It just is reference to the shape and size. It's more of a parlor size guitar. So it was made for, like, you know, younger musicians or women at the time, something smaller bodied and lighter weight to hold. But they project really well. They were made to compete and still play back before you could plug things in and amplify the sound. So they could hold up to brass instruments and other things like that. So the top of it has a weird look. It has this bow called the Century of Progress guitar. And actually, a lot of that guitar, even the fretboard, has that perloid plasticky look. It's really like looks like mother of pearl. It's supposed to simulate that. But beautiful thing. This thing, I bought it because, A, I thought I might want to play it. It looked like it needed a little bit of work, but it also came with a pickup that was installed over the sound hole, which was a D'Armond pickup from like the 1950s. And
so that you could make it, you could hook it up to speakers.
I can amplify it. Yep. Yeah, but what I actually planned on doing was taking, I knew that had value because I had researched it before. So I paid, they wanted $900 for it on eBay. I end up chatting back and forth. They end up selling it to me for $500. That pickup, that D'Armond pickup, is worth about $500. So I took the pickup off. I sold it for, I think, $450. So it's a guitar. I'm basically in for, you know, $50 on it. And I've done nothing to it except I took the screws out of the pick guard because they were rusted. And I put a new little bone saddle down in here to replace the plastic one. And it sounds really awesome. It looks to me and sounds very much very woody. Very much like a blues tone. I almost can't sit down and not play blues music on it, you know, because it's just, well, it just calls to you.
I want to caution you, Matt. You did say when you're a reseller that they could buy stuff and then, I just can't sell it. I just can't. It sounds like with instruments, that's the one area where you need to really be careful. Maybe artwork, but it's probably not hard for you to part with a pocket watch. It's sometimes hard for you to part with a guitar. That's all. I'm spitballing here, Matt, but that's
no, listen, I appreciate it. I need people like you who are going to keep me accountable and call me out on that stuff. This one will sell eventually. I just haven't got the price. It's actually up, available for sale now. I just haven't got the price that I want yet. So, but yeah, this guitar, this Gibson I was talking about, that's like a once in a lifetime sound as far as I'm concerned. And it's just like, I know for a fact that if I sold that, I would regret it. I would regret it next week and for the rest of my life. So unless I somehow get destitute and the only thing I have left is a guitar in my hands, I might have to sell it, but hopefully
yeah,
not.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I honestly, this is the coolest show I've ever done. I don't know a lot about instruments. I'm not really a musician. I play a little beach guitar, but I do love people that are actually into things and are interested in them. And I feel like you set the tone for what this show is all about, which is finding those things. So hopefully somebody out there who either loves instruments or doesn't love instruments, but when you're going to that estate sale and you see something, do a little bit of research. You might actually have a treasure right there in front of you.
And when you guys go out there to these estate sales and you find Gibson instruments that need some work on them and you don't want to buy it, call me up because I might be game on this. You know, this has worked out for me.
Absolutely. At the whatsoldpodcast.com or gmail.com or whatever we are, but I will be putting those in the link. Well, listen, Matt, we are
awesome.
We are out of time, but I really appreciate the time you've put into this. I love your passion for music. I will be posting these links again. We're still working on that stuff, but remember to subscribe and all that stuff. But otherwise, we will see you in our next show, which in a couple of days, not sure when that's going to be. And I'm not sure what it's going to be about, but we are excited to be with you. So thank you, Matt, for your time. We'll talk to everybody soon.
Of course. Yeah. Take care, everyone. Have a great week.